Good morning, New Mexico. Welcome to the Santa Fe Radio Cafe. My name is Mary Charlotte. We're broadcasting from the Santa Fe Baking Company, streaming on the web at ksfr.org, podcasting at santafe.radiocafe.org, thanks to Dotfoil Computer Services, and we're at facebook.com/radiocafe. Later on in the program, we're going to be speaking to the folks who are putting on the musical comedy Company. It's a musical by Stephen Sondheim. Before we go to our first segment, I would like to just encourage people. Today is election day. Please go out and vote. Ladies, we fought for the right to vote about 90 years ago, and now we get to do it. Go do it, ladies and gentlemen. I'm delighted now to welcome back to the show Gary Glasner. He is a poet. He is the founder and executive director of the Alzheimer's Poetry Project, and he will be here in Santa Fe this coming Thursday, the 4th of November, at Collected Works Bookstore. Welcome to the Radio Cafe.
Hi, it's great to be here.
It's good to have you back. You were in Santa Fe for many years, and you were a regular guest on the show. Then you went to New York and brought the, among other things, the Alzheimer's Poetry Project to other parts of the world. Why don't you tell us, what is the Alzheimer's Poetry Project?
Well, first, it started in Santa Fe in 2004, and it's a project of New Mexico Literary Arts, or a small nonprofit board that has among its members Joan Logie, the poet laureate of Santa
yeah.
Fe. And so they gave me $300 in seed money and said, go to it. And we started doing programming here at Sierra Vista Assisted Living Center. And the concept is to use poetry that the people might have learned as children. And the inspiration was a workshop that I taught in Northern California before I moved to Santa Fe. And the moment of inspiration for me was there was a guy in the group, his head was down, he wasn't participating at all, and I would say he was completely unaware of his surroundings. And I said the Longfellow poem, I shot an arrow in the air, and his eyes popped open, and he said, it fell to earth, I know not where. And suddenly he was back with us, and he was able to participate, and it was a real heartfelt moment for me as a poet. And so I knew I wanted to develop that into a full project, that short workshop that I did in Northern California. And so 2004, I got that $300 in seed money and started to work with Sierra Vista. And the first day, one of the things that we do often was we'll bring in a prop. For instance, we'll bring in leaves and bark and branches and do tree poems. And it gives them a sort of sensual thing that they can touch the bark and smell the leaves. And then you do poems, you know, I've never seen a poem as lovely as a tree, that kind of thing. And then, so we perform and create poems with them. So at Sierra Vista, I was searching around that morning, and I didn't know what I was going to bring. And I kept looking around, and finally I looked outside and I thought, I'm going to bring snow. And so I filled an ice chest full of snow, and I brought the snow in, and I started to make snowballs and pass them out to the residents.
Inside.
And some of them, you know, that was too cold to the touch, they didn't want to touch it. Others grabbed it and immediately started to eat the snow. And then Ruth Dennis, the activities director, said, throw them at Gary. And so suddenly, there I was in the middle of this assisted living center getting pelted with snow. Miles to go, whack, before I splat, sleep, you know, this kind of thing. And so it was a really wonderful experience. And to really see, there was a lot of humor in working with this element of our community. So our core techniques that we use are call and response, where the session leader says a line of poetry and has the group respond back to them. And we do that, and we perform poems with the people. And we do that usually for 20, 30 minutes of all kinds of different poems. And then we'll create a poem with them using a simple prompt. And we'll take a model poem. And, for instance, one of the poems that we used with an assisted, an early stage group in Purchase, New York, was the poem Rain by Hani Tufar. He's a New Zealand poet. This poem was voted New Zealand's most beloved poem. It goes like this. Rain, I can hear you making small holes in the silence, rain. And if I were deaf, my pores would open to you and shut. And I should know you by the lick of you if I were blind. The something special smell you make when you suncake the ground. The steady drum roll you make when the wind drops. But if I should not hear, see, smell, or taste you, you would still define me. disperse me, wash over me, rain. And so we'll perform that poem with them, and then we talk a little bit about how he experiences rain through his senses, what it smells like, tastes like, feels like. And so with this group, what we did was we decided to write a poem about the sun. And so you'll hear their answers in the order that they gave them, with no editing really, just trying to get exactly the language that they used. And so what we did was we also explored the sun not only through our senses, but we talked about the sun, how it changes throughout the day. So like if you see the sun at sunrise, it's one thing, noon it's another, dusk, midnight. And so you'll hear some lines about that too. And this one goes like this. It goes, sun, warm, bright, hot, light, different throughout the day. Orange, that's a hot container. I have to bend over the tools and make it go where I want to. Come here, sonny. Like a hot shower or a hug. Smells like an ocean breeze. Smells like an orange. Don't leave tangerines out. Sometimes it could be a grapefruit. Sounds like water dripping over a dam at low tide. Sounds like light. Hot as hell, hot as the dickens, warm as a pussycat. The sun at dawn is bright as a new baby. Even if it's a girl, especially if it's a girl. Babies are babies. Orange, sky bright. I guess I might have to wake up earlier. It might be white. It tastes like orangeade. I've seen at noon, the sun is bright as fire. Lime in a coconut. Feels like a smile, sounds like a kiss. What about in summer, midday, like a burning fire, hot, uncomfortable, need your shade, need your shades, and your suntan lotion, and your air conditioner. Summer is coming soon. The sun at dusk, it gets redder and redder. It's going out. The sun is setting. Who tastes the setting sun? The midnight sun is black as tar. The sun tastes like death. Who looks out of their window for the sun at midnight? We could look up at the moon. We could chop it into sections, like an eclipse, the shape of the sun on the moon. Brilliant minds, we ought to turn them on. So that last line was, they just said it as the poem was ending, and one of the guys just looked up and said, brilliant minds, we ought to turn them on. I thought that was such a great line for an early stage dementia group.
The fact that you're working not only with people who are at the end of their lives or getting toward the end of their lives, but people who are really on a one-way street to oblivion mentally and physically is such an amazing thing. I mean, it's a testament to the idea that every life and every soul is valuable.
Yeah, and one of the challenges for me personally and for the poets that I work with, and we've got around 30 or so poets now nationally and internationally that work with us on the project, and it's the challenge really is to keep pushing ourselves of what the creative possibilities are, and not to limit ourselves and to sort of box ourselves into what we think the responses are going to be. And it really is a remarkable place to be as a poet, to be invited into their lives, and you know, you meet the family members and healthcare workers that work with them as well, and it's very powerful.
How has it affected your own poetry?
Well, I've written a lot about the experience, and I give a talk, a kind of inspirational talk at conferences. I'm giving a talk up in Denver on Saturday, and I've written some poems about it. One of the poems I've written is called We Are Forget, and it's written in the voices of some of the people that I've worked with, and it goes like, we are forget, we are the words we have forgotten, we are shifting and pacing, we wrote this poem. It's a pretty poem. Can you bake a cherry pie? Nevermore, nevermore. We have no horizon. We don't recall washing or eating or what you just said. Ask me my name. Ask me if I have children. You are my daughter? Light washing over us, moment, moment. We have no horizon. We don't recall washing or eating or what you just said. Wash me. Put me to bed clean. Brush my hair. Give me a kiss. Our handwriting is beautiful, twists and loops of letters. We can't remember our hands. Our ears are wishful. We can't remember our ears. We speak every language. We can't remember our mouths. We are the past. We are porous. We are forget.
Gary Glasner, You have a new book, Nútreme Hoy, Proyecto de Poesía de Alzheimer. You tell us what this book is, because this is what you're doing on Thursday night, which is introducing this book at Collected Works Bookstore at 6 o'clock.
Yeah, so this book was a lot of fun to put together, and it came out of the Spanish and English sessions we were doing at Open Hands here in Santa Fe. And I got to work with a wonderful editor and translator that lives in Albuquerque, Anaceli Verde Claro. And there was a couple of things that were kind of neat about this book. The first one is that the I started to do research and go into the history library over on Cerrillos Road, and I found that back around the turn of the, around the end of the 1800s, early 1900s, there was a lot of Spanish language newspapers that were being published in New Mexico, a real history of those, and a lot of the editors that worked at those newspapers were poets, and many of those issues that I would find had poems published on the front page, which is quite different than our newspapers today.
Well, there is something about the whole maybe Spanish and Latin temperament where poetry is much more integrated into life, where you have politicians who are poets and front pages of newspapers with poetry on them,
yeah,
that somehow our English-speaking world doesn't really resonate to.
Yeah, and it's I think that's very true. And so one of the things that's come out of the book is that we found, and this was directly from a conference that the Alzheimer's Association put on up in Taos, and I gave the workshop on how to use poetry, and a mother and daughter came up to me afterwards, and they said, my husband, her father, is starting to say these dichos, and they'd never heard him say these before, these wisdom sayings or proverbs.
Right.
And so he started to say these spontaneously, and so we started to experiment with using the dichos in the sessions, and they really get great response. If the people don't know that directly the one you're saying, it will always trigger ones that they know, and so we've had a really great response with those. And one of them that we do call and response. Would you like to try a call and response? So you could fill in for the person in the session. I'll say a line of the poetry or the dicho, and you repeat after me. The listeners at home can say it along with you.
Okay.
All right? So here's how it goes.
Go ahead.
Ready? It goes, pan es pan.
Pan es pan.
Queso es queso.
Queso es queso.
No hay amor.
No hay amor.
Sino hay un beso.
Sino hay un beso.
Bread
that's
is bread.
So cute. Bread is bread.
Cheese is cheese.
Cheese is cheese.
If you don't kiss me.
If you don't kiss me.
There is no love.
Oh.
And so the way we use that is we perform it back and forth with them, and then we'll ask an open-ended question around it. In this case, we ask the person to describe their first kiss. And so these are some of the answers we got that formed the poem, working with our partners in Milwaukee, the Latino Geriatric Center, which is a remarkable facility there. And so we started to ask people about their first kiss, and one man said, that means we were too poor to have bread and cheese, but my mom would give me kisses. And then another woman said, my first boyfriend, we never even kissed, we only held hands. And then one guy said, I would wait down by the river, and my girlfriend would come to get water for her family, and we would kiss down there. And then one woman said, my father would never let me kiss boys, but my father wasn't always there. And then one woman, you have to imagine this, she's very tiny, she's 90 years old, a little under 5 feet tall, maybe 90 pounds at that, but with incredibly regal bearing, just very regal. And she pointed to her cheek and she said, he kissed me here. And then she pointed to her lips and said, he kissed me here. And then she drew a line across her throat and said, you don't kiss me below here. So that was a wonderful poem with them. And they actually have been doing programming almost for a little over a year. And they went to 2 hours. They like it so much. They do 2 hours every Friday. So that's a great group there.
The book Nutreme Hoy means nurture me today, and it's totally bilingual. So people don't have to know Spanish to get something out of this book, to get the book.
Yeah, and we really thought that a lot of the younger generation that may be caring for their mothers and fathers, that are reverting to their original language, Spanish, the younger generation may not have as much Spanish as their parents did. And so that's why we did it bilingual.
And they may not have all the dichos and the cultural pieces of that.
Yeah, so it's a great way. The book is built so that somebody can take it. If your mom or dad has Alzheimer's or a neighbor or any kind of loved one, you can take the book and work with the people, and it has instructions on how to do that. And it's made for that purpose.
We're talking to Gary Glazner of the Alzheimer's Poetry Project. So you're doing this work in all sorts of places. You're doing it in English and Spanish. You're also doing some things in Hebrew and Yiddish, and also in Germany, in German.
Yeah, I met a German woman, Petra Anders, who had moved to New York, and she came to the session and saw what we were doing, and we were working intergenerationally with teenage poets. So we taught the teenage poets to recite the poems. We brought them into the facility. They performed with the elders, and then they go back and write about their experiences. They write poems or do drawings or little essays. And so Petra said, we have to start this in Germany. So she went and got some poets, including Lars Ruppel, who lives in Marburg. It's right above Frankfurt. And Wolf Hogekamp, who lives in Berlin, and they raised enough money to bring me over last September. And so we went over there and we translated all the training materials into German and started to work with them. And then that led to a meeting with the U.S. Embassy in Berlin. And they love the project. They love the intergenerational aspect that we work with students and elders. And they funded a year-long project, which has just ended. And we had over 500 people participate, students, teachers, poets, healthcare workers, and people living with dementia.
And the Yiddish piece, are you doing that in New York?
Yeah, I found a great poet, Julian Taub, and we started talking about the project, and it came out, he says, oh, I know Yiddish and Hebrew, and so we work with a place in Brooklyn called Ateret Avot, which actually has the largest percentage of Holocaust survivors among its people that live there.
And by this point, those are pretty old folks, most of them.
Yeah, the age range we work with is, the early stage people might be in their 50s or early 60s, and then it goes up into the hundreds.
Yeah.
And, often they'll be in their 80s, 90s.
Is Yiddish at this point still an active language? Are young people learning it, or is it more really a kind of dying out language of that generation?
Well, we started to do work with this group about a year ago in English, and there's no barrier to using English. Everybody speaks English. There's no problem with doing the poems in English. But when they do either the Hebrew or Yiddish, and they're often songs, and they often are around the religious ceremonies that they have, it just is a whole nother level of engagement. And, you can do a poem by Shakespeare, Shall I Compare Thee to a Summer's Day? And they love it. They know the poem and they love it. But you start singing something in Yiddish or doing some funny poem in Yiddish, and they really come alive. And it's amazing to see. Do we have time for one quick story about Germany?
Yeah.
So one of the rhymes that everybody knows in Germany is called Alle meine Entchen, and it goes sung to the tune of I'm a Little Teapot. It goes like, Alle meine Entchen swimming up dem See. It basically says, all my little ducks are swimming on the lake. The head goes down a fishing, the butt goes in the air. And so this is a rhyme that all Germans know. I started to ask people this, and I was over on the Marburg River, and I was rowing down. It was a beautiful summer, fall day. Leaves were out, and I came up on these two German construction workers welding on this bridge. And I rowed up to them, and I held my hand up, and I said, may I ask you a question, please? And they were both, what? They were really upset. And all I had to do was start to go, Alle meine Entchen, and their faces turned to little boys, and they started to sing with me.
Oh, my goodness. Gary Glazner is a poet. He's founder and executive director of the Alzheimer's Poetry Project, and he's in Santa Fe right now. He will be here on Thursday, the 4th of November at 6 o'clock at Collected Works Bookstore in Santa Fe on Galisteo Street. And the website is alzpoetry.com. And he's introducing this new book, the bilingual edition, Nutre Me Hoy, Nurture Me Today. It's wonderful to have you back. And keep up the great work.
Well, it's great to be back.
And we look forward to having you when you are back in Santa Fe in the future and hearing more about this project as it evolves, which it's been doing over so many years. We're going to take a little break right now. We'll be back in a moment. Please stay tuned.
I mean, when you've got friends like mine. I mean, when you've got friends like mine. Isn't it warm? Isn't it rosy? Side by side.
He's such a cutie.
By side.
Isn't he a cutie?
Ports in a storm. Comfy and cozy. Side by side.
He never loses his cool.
By side.
I envy that.
Everything shines. How sweet. Side by side.
We're just so fond of him.
By side. Parallel lines. Who meet.
Love him, can't get enough of him.
Everyone winks, nobody's nosy. Side by side.
He's just crazy about me.
Side.
He's a very tender guy.
You bring the drinks and I'll bring the posy. Side by side.
He's always there when you need him.
By side. One is lonely and two is boring.
Oh.
Think what you can keep ignoring. Side.
He's my best friend.
By side.
Second best.
By side.
Never a bother. Seven times a godfather. Year after year. Older and older.
It's amazing. We're getting older every year, but he seems to stay exactly the same.
Sharing a tear. Lending a shoulder.
You know what comes to my mind when I think of it?
What?
The Seagram's building. Isn't that funny?
Ain't we got fun? No strain.
Sometimes I catch him looking and looking. I just look right back.
Permanent sun. No rain. We're so crazy. He's so sane. Friendship forbids.
And we've just been listening to music from the musical comedy Company, which is being performed starting tomorrow, Thursday the 4th of November, and going on for a couple of weekends. I have here in the Santa Fe Baking Company, Christy Carson, who is the artistic director of Santa Fe Rep. Clara Soyster is the director, and Campbell Martin is an actor and doing the musical staging in Company. Should I call it a play or a musical? It's sort of
musical.
Both. In the musical. Yeah. Okay. Well, welcome, ladies and gentlemen.
Thank you.
So this is a musical comedy by Stephen Sondheim. I can't remember when there's been a Sondheim musical performed in Santa Fe.
Yeah, that was one of the reasons for doing it, because not only is Sondheim hardly ever done in Santa Fe, rarely, but I'm sure that Company has never been done.
Now, tell us about this play. It seems, I went to a rehearsal, it seems super New York.
Oh, good, that's where it is. it's very much about, what would you put, non-commitment. It's actually relationships, but people, especially in an urban setting, but of today, not being able to commit. It's really about wanting to commit, but never quite getting there, or being there and wanting out, or all of those variations on that.
Yeah, specifically the main character, Bobby. Is single. He's celebrating his 39th birthday, and so in the musical, he has several couple friends, married couple friends, and then there's three single girlfriends. So you get that from both sides. You get the input from married couples and then also from the three single girls. And he's kind of, yeah, caught in between the married couples and the singles. The married people are trying to get him married, and, you know, the single girls are still wanting to date him and like that. So he's caught there in that moment of wondering, is he going to commit or not? Yeah.
But he's also looking at these five couples, these married people, and seeing how dysfunctional they are, and he's sitting there, why get married?
Well, yeah. I mean, I haven't seen the whole thing yet. It'll be fun to see the full production, but the rehearsal I went to, I was watching one of the scenes where he's over at his friend's house where this couple, and they are the poster children for bad marriage.
I wonder what scene that was.
Probably your scene, Campbell.
Probably could have been more than one of them.
Yeah. Well, they're all slightly dysfunctional in their own way. And that's what makes this kind of charming. This was originally done separate little vignettes. And as a play, the storyline comes from. And then it was brought by Hal Prince and Stephen Sondheim into this little musical and tied together, sort of. Still in vignettes, yep. But Bobby's in each one of the scenes. The poor actor never leaves the stage. He just goes from scene to scene.
Yeah, and George Firth wrote those vignettes, and he still, Stephen Sondheim wrote the music, but George Firth did write the book, the scenes, the vignettes that it's all based on.
Now, this premiered in 1970?
Right. And so it's really full of that period, I think, in New York, too, where sexualities were being redefined. And then again, whether you're going to be married or single. And so all those kind of questions about relationship, sexual identity are rife in the piece,
right.
Which makes it so interesting.
Drugs and alcoholism also.
Oh, that too.
And questions of homosexuality and do I, divorce and one of the best couples in the play, the one that seems to be one of the most loving couples, actually got divorced, but they're still together.
and happier divorced.
Yeah. Well, and there was some weird stuff going on in that era too.
Yeah.
Does it feel, when you read through the script and when you start rehearsing it, does it feel dated? Does it feel like a 70s piece?
I don't think so.
I'm sorry, go ahead.
Yeah, no.
I agree, too. Yeah. I don't think it's dated at all.
Not much has changed.
Uh-uh. Right,
really
in that particular realm.
Yeah.
Probably, in a way, the lack of things like cell phones and internets and the accoutrements of our lives today would be what dates it, and you might not even notice that they were missing.
Well, the show opens with a series of phone calls, and everyone's on their cell phones today,
right?
And listening to messages, texting. This whole thing—it's just no answering service anymore,
right?
Like when it was written. Right. So it kind of makes sense. And the music, sometimes the backfill of some of the music sounds a little dated as far as musical theater is concerned, but it really floats just fine in today's.
Well, and one of the things Sondheim said when he created this piece was, he wanted to get away from the happily ever afters in so many musicals. And in this, he said, really what it says is that in relationships, it just keeps going. Relationships keep changing and moving and going, and they don't necessarily end or get better. It just keeps going.
Right.
Yeah.
And that's one reason I think it's not dated or doesn't appear dated also, because the themes are really universal and timeless, you know. You've got good marriages, you've got bad marriages, you've got, people, again, deciding whether they're gay or straight. I mean, some of the themes that are in the musical are timeless, really.
Right. Yeah, you probably find them all in Greek epics.
Exactly. Absolutely. And I think that also, these people, as dysfunctional as they are, they really love each other.
Yes.
I mean, it's obvious, and how it all ties up, that these people really love each other, and this is how they operate and how they function.
Well, it's funny you say Greek, because one of the things they both, George Firth and Sondheim, thought about when writing this was that the married couples are like a Greek chorus. They're the ones standing there watching and observing. Really, the whole play takes place, if you will, in Bobby's head. It's him reviewing on his birthday the question of commitment, do I want to get married, all of these questions. And so these vignettes, it's a concept musical, so there's no set timeline. So we're jumping around to moments, between couples, between him and the women he's dating, as he goes over this in his head.
We're talking about Company, a musical comedy that is opening tomorrow, and it's happening at Warehouse 21, which is where your last production, Anything Goes, happened.
Exactly. We started with Cole Porter's Anything Goes last fall, and I had chosen that because it's just such an entertaining piece. People love the Cole Porter music and engaging book, fun characters, but certainly with Company now, we're getting into a little more challenging, more adult terrain, so which I'm happy about.
And you're bringing in actors from out of Santa Fe.
Yes, we're fortunately have two actors came up from Albuquerque, so we're happy about that. And also there's quite a lot of new actor-singers, even from Santa Fe here, that audiences wouldn't have seen before.
Yeah, they've recently moved to Santa Fe, and we're glad they're here.
Yay.
Yeah.
This play, this comedy, this musical, keep getting the words wrong, when it came out, was very successful, very popular. It ran forever in both New York and London.
Yep. With several different cast changes throughout, and that's what would intrigue people to go see. People fell in love with that. In fact, there's a man we all know here in Santa Fe who sent an email to me saying when he was at Manhattan School of Music, he went and saw Company 7 times. And the original cast, and then he eventually saw Jane Russell play the role of Joanne. And,
oh,
I mean, and he knows so much about it. And there's other people that I saw the other night at another restaurant that said, oh, my God, we saw it when we went to New York in the 70s. So not everyone, but a lot of people have a strong connection to this show. And for me, I didn't move to New York until the late 70s. This was gone. But this was my generation's Rent.
Mm. Right. Yeah.
You know how the kids that I teach at the former College of Santa Fe, they were Rent. Well, when I was in college, was Company, but we weren't old enough to play them.
Right.
And now I'm finally old enough to play one of these roles.
I just want to add to that a minute, too, because I, too, have found out by talking to people about that we're doing Company, so many people have said to me that it's their favorite show or one of their favorite shows. So it's really interesting to see how many people love this show. And also I just wanted to add about when it came out in 1970, it really was revolutionary for its time. Mm-hmm. Sondheim and George Firth really broke new ground from what had been before that. The nonlinear plot, the vignettes, the lack of a traditional set, kind of just a very minimalistic set. There are many things that he did that were new to New York, and I think that contributed to why it was so popular, because it was so fresh and so groundbreaking.
One of the things you said a moment ago was that how the idea of happily ever after and happy endings, in real life you don't have an ending. And I was thinking about how our language betrays us when we always say, well, in the end, this or that will happen. What's the end?
You don't know.
Besides death, which isn't one ending, but even that, humanity goes on, and it just is the sort of continuous thing. And I love it that this play actually kind of speaks to that.
And even when you get to the end of this play, you're not sure where Bobby's headed. I mean, you have an idea maybe where
don't
he's
give too
going,
much away.
But, you know, it's everybody makes their own decision at the end, really, I think.
Yeah, I think it's very good at posing questions, not necessarily resolving or answering them.
Right. And there is this funny phenomenon that I noticed when I was in my 20s. Luckily, people left me alone, but there were some people who I graduated from college with who were unmarried, and all their friends were trying to get them married and wondering what was wrong with them.
Yes, that's it. Yeah.
Yeah, definitely. There's pressure to get married. I know I was 28 when I got married the first time, and I felt like, oh, I'm getting close to 30. I better get married. Yeah.
Well, and Bobby's just hounded
throughout
this. Why aren't you married? Why aren't you married? And here he has three girlfriends and many more. There's a few more alluded to, so he's sort of a serial dater on top of everything else. And
there's also a quote, and I think it's actually one of my lines, if I can remember it, that at the very end of the show when they're talking to Bobby, trying to make a resolution, I say to him, you have so many reasons for not being, you have so many reasons for not being with someone, but Robert, you don't have one good reason for being alone. All these little thoughts are coming at him like this, and so it's up to him to make the decision at the end, and it slightly resolves.
It does, because, well, and the songs speak to it. The great thing about Sondheim's songs, because this is the first musical he wrote on his own.
The lyrics and the music.
The lyrics and the music.
Exactly.
Before that, it had been, you know, either or,
lyrics.
But this was both. And it shows. And there's several songs in this that people will just know. They've heard Bernadette Peters sing it. They've heard, you know.
Right.
There's so many great songs in this.
Yeah, maybe we'll hear another one at the end if we have time. Yeah,
absolutely.
But that, again, is part of what was so revolutionary, that the songs really forward, you know, progressed the action of the story.
Right.
You know, it wasn't just in the dialogue that the songs were an important, integral part of that.
There's songs you actually have to act. There's just as much information in the songs for the character as the scenes.
Right. It's not, as we say in opera, park and bark.
Right.
No. I love it.
This style of musicals set the stage for things like A Chorus Line, things like that. This stark reality, true human nature songs. No incidental music for set changes. You know, nothing like that. No small children with bows in their hair at all. I might say this is not really a musical you'd bring the kids to.
It's not.
That's why I really set the student rate for 15 and over.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, because it's adult material.
Right.
And fortunately, my daughter, who just graduated from high school, had turned all of her friends on to this. And so it's nice to have a younger generation actually learning about Company, coming to see it and getting
Now, is there dancing in it?
Oh, thanks to Campbell.
Yes. There's a lot of movement in this.
Yeah.
And it's kind of like moving cattle, you know, in a lovely way.
What are you saying about your cast members?
They're lovely, every single one of them. Well, no, it's because the story has to move, because the set doesn't change. People have to move to make transitions. And then there's numbers that require definite choreography, like the cute little number the three girlfriends do called You Could Drive a Person Crazy. It's got to have movement. And then there's another number that opens the second act called Side by Side. And it's Bobby and these couples, and they go into this song called What Would We Do Without You, which is a crazy vaudeville number. They're pulling out every trick in the book to get his attention, to wow, wow, wow me. And he's just driving him crazy. They're pulling him, tugging him, and they bring out the canes. They bring out, you know, all the stops. So there's some movement.
It wasn't meant to be a dancing show,
right,
even from the get-go, right?
Well, no, there used to be a big dance number in this show that most people do not do. In fact, it was originated by Donna McKechnie in the role of Kathy. It was a big, long dance number called Tick Tock. And most people, it's been cut out of nearly every major production from that point.
Are you doing it?
No, we're not doing it.
No.
It adds another 15, 20 minutes to the show.
Ah.
And that music is really dated.
And I think it was pretty much created for Donna McKechnie.
Yeah.
So, yeah. Anyway.
We're talking about Sondheim's Company, the musical comedy, which is going to be at Warehouse 21. Did you have trouble casting this?
That was my first question to Christy when she said she wanted to do the show, is do you think we can cast it? Because there's 14 people, and because it's Sondheim, it's a challenge.
Yeah.
You
have to be. What's challenging about Sondheim?
Well, the music is challenging. You have to really, you can't just be a, how would you put it?
Well, they have to have beautiful voices to handle the music, but they also have to have that degree of musicianship.
There we go.
That they really are facile and easy with learning music and doing the harmonies. So it requires that certain level. And also with Sondheim, not only do they have to be these musicians and have these beautiful voices, but they also have to be good actors.
Yeah.
They've got to be able to handle the material.
And Campbell can do both.
So, right. So, actually, I mean, that was the question. Would we be able to find 14? But Claire and I did the auditions together, and, you know, they really came out of the woodwork.
They did.
We got such a great collection of people, and who we've ended up with, we are all so thankful for, because they are exactly that model, good singers and good actors.
And really amazingly fun people. I mean, this cast gets along very well, which is a huge asset.
That's great.
It's fun every night.
It is. It's a blast.
Yeah. It sounds like a musical in which you can do it with a pretty minimal set. Is that right?
Yeah.
Just as it was done when it opened in 1970. It was very minimal. Mm-hmm. And we are doing that again. Just 'cause, and also that's part of what Santa Fe Rep's mission is. I never want the set to like overtake what the show is about. I want to focus on the actor, the book, the music, those elements, and have them right front and center. So,
now, tell us more about Santa Fe Rep, because this was your brainchild, and it started, what, about a year ago?
Yeah, just last year, 2009. Uh-huh. Well, and I, you know, last year was when I stopped working at NDI. I was on staff there for 4 years teaching, and I realized that kind of the next step in mentoring, I loved mentoring the kids, but...
NDI, National Dance Institute.
At National Dance Institute, but... They really, there's teen organizations like El Dorado Children and Teens and Pandemonium and, of course, NDI, and then in the context of the various high schools, they have opportunities to perform. But there was really no kind of professional model where they could come in and be in a professional setting and be in performances alongside experienced adults. And I thought that was really the next step in mentoring that wasn't here in Santa Fe, an opportunity for them to really to get paid to, you know, do this in that kind of a setting. So that was one of the impetuses. And the other impetus was the fact that musicals with adults are so rarely done in this town. And then clearly, as company shows, the talent is here, but they have no opportunity to do what they can do.
That's true, because I was a man who made my living in New York doing musicals. I've lived here 11 years. I've directed, choreographed, but I've not been in a musical.
Yeah.
And so it's very exciting for me to be in an adult musical.
Now, how do the three of you work together? You're a creative team,
well,
as it says on the flyer.
Collaboratively. I mean, I think that's the whole thing I love about theater. It is a collaborative effort. It's getting... When you have people who... like having Campbell on board and coming on board with Christy is taking what our strengths are and then piecing them together. And when Campbell actually suggested doing that he might do musical staging, I jumped on it because I don't have a background in that, and his is phenomenal. And what he's brought to the show is so great. And then, of course, Christy being gracious enough to bring me on board and say, come on, direct this puppy.
Also, we met long before
rehearsals.
Yeah,
we met Campbell.
And
yeah,
we drew pictures. We read.
For months, we were like, oh, where can we go with this song?
Sitting on my patio and just going through stuff.
Because we love this material, and it's so rich, and you can dive into it and really find treasures and places to go that bring it alive, bring it all alive.
The musical is Company by Stephen Sondheim, and it opens tomorrow. It's November 4th through 7th, and then again the 11th through 14th, Thursday, Friday, and Saturday at 8 in the evening, Sundays at 4 in the afternoon at Warehouse 21. And for tickets and more information, people can call 989-4423, extension 7, and they can go to sfrep.org, of which Christy Carson is the artistic director. Clara Soyster is the director of Company, and Campbell Martin acts in it and does the musical staging. Thank you all so much for being with us.
Thank you.
Thank you.
You've been listening to the Santa Fe Radio Cafe. My name is Mary Charlotte. We're streaming live on the web at ksfr.org, podcasting at santafe.radiocafe.org, thanks to Dotfoil Computer Services. You can subscribe to the show on iTunes. You can find us at facebook.com/radiocafe, and my email address is radiocafe@ksfr.org. Stay tuned for the BBC, then local news by KSFR's award-winning news team, and after that, jazz.